Signature support for Talk Louisiana is from the Office of Mayor President, East Baton Rouge Parish. And the show originates from the Investor Tower here in Baton Rouge. Welcome back. I'm Steve Crump, guest hosting today for Jim Engster. Robin Dow is our producer. She says Jim will be back tomorrow, so he'll be in this chair. Thank you, Jim, for inviting me to host an interesting show. Today is the birthday of novelist F. Scott Fitzgerald. How many of you remember Great Gatsby? And it's also the birthday of blues singer Lemon Jefferson. Lemon Jefferson was often called Blind Lemon Jefferson. We hope to hear one of the tunes he recorded about 97 years ago in Chicago. Amazing. But he's probably one of the most important, most popular blues musicians in the country back in the Roaring Twenties. Today is exactly 6 weeks before Election Day. If Jim were here, I know he would remind you to get registered. Are you registered? Do you know for sure? It's not too late to register exactly 6 weeks before Election Day. National, state, and local elections need our attention. And I hear it is not too late to attend the WRKF Founders Luncheon set for this Friday with journalist Martin Barron. And recognition is planned on Friday for community leaders Jim Engster and Jenny Peters. And while we're celebrating, we might as well do a shout-out to those Heisman Trophy winners who met each other in Cincinnati last night. That was amazing. Jaden Daniels makes football look way, way too easy. Too easy. He was having way too much fun. But what an exciting game to see some former LSU players out there meeting each other. And the second half portion of the program today features yet another community leader, my friend Maxine Crump. But first, we turn our attention to our studio guests, Dr. Kelly Cannon and Cherie Johnson. Cherie is Vice President of Patient Services, and she's a chief nursing officer at Woman's Hospital, not too far away from the studio. Only a few weeks ago, the new perinatal unit, actually this month, was open with much hope for better mental health care for women in our region, especially mothers. It's a unique unit and one of the very few in the nation. So we're going to hear from our guests. Remember, the phone number here at Talk Louisiana is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757. Dr. Cannon, welcome to the program. It's exciting for you. I know this is quite an adventure. You are your field is psychiatry. What conditions are most prevalent around the phenomenal event of giving birth to a child? What's going on?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Yes, so we have designed this perinatal mental health unit to help our perinatal population. So these are patients that are pregnant up to 1 year post-pregnancy. And we have been wanting to help patients that struggle with perinatal mental, mood, and anxiety disorders. And this can range from everything from perinatal depression, major depression in pregnancy, perinatal anxiety, and even postpartum depression or maybe postpartum psychosis. We designed this unit for patients to be able to have a place where they can receive inpatient psychiatric care that's really able to take care of the whole patient in general. So we're able to take care of our pregnant patients by being able to address not only their psychiatric needs, but also their medical and obstetrical needs. And then for our postpartum patients, we designed this unit so that our postpartum mothers will have a place where they can come get inpatient psychiatric care, but also be able to visit with families. We have special visitation where we're able to have babies come and be with the mothers on the unit during special infant visitation in order to protect that mother-infant bonding.
There are all kinds of issues that are stirred up literally, right? Not
yes.
only in the human body, but in the family system.
Right. It's a very vulnerable time for women.
Very vulnerable time.
Yes.
And I've known, as a pastor, I've known some families who, in reflecting back on this, I just wish there were a unit like this, because this affects the whole system.
Absolutely.
And just because a mother's had a pretty good experience with the first child doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the same with the second.
Absolutely. Every pregnancy is different.
Cherie Johnson, welcome to the Talk Louisiana. This is a big responsibility for Women's Hospital, but it comes with great celebration. The governor was there for the ribbon cutting, along with other dignitaries. What is your hope for the unit?
My hope is really to destigmatize mental health issues.
Right.
Pregnant women in general have, excuse me, a lot of social media pressures, a lot of pressures in general working, trying to manage family, balancing everything. So with that, having any mental health issues is seen as really a moral failure, and it's not. Mental health should be viewed just like diabetes. It is a medical condition.
And this condition affects one in five women. That's what the studies show. I can well imagine that in a family system, whether it's from grandparents or from dad or other kids or society in general, the question would be, well, can't you just tough this out?
That's the stigma.
That's what you're fighting against. That's what you're trying to break.
Right.
Toughing this out is going to be, it can be a disaster for mom right. and for the whole family system.
Absolutely. And we really want our patients to not feel alone and not have to suffer alone. And I really think that nationally, even, this is being recognized as being important, of being able to get these mothers the help and the care that they really need.
This is an inpatient unit.
An inpatient psychiatric unit, yes, sir.
Mother can be there for maybe up to 2 weeks,
Up to 2 weeks if needed. A lot of moms will be home in less than 2 weeks, but we really do base how long the patient is needing based on their needs and how much care they need.
So there's obstetrics are involved, there's physicians involved, nurses that are involved, instructions on maybe breastfeeding.
Absolutely, yes.
And reconnecting with a child if it had been difficult at first, given whatever the mother has gone through,
right.
And also in connection with the family system.
Right.
So there's visiting Absolutely. From the family as well.
And that's what really is important about this unit, is that other psychiatric facilities just don't have the capability. They don't have the resources to be able to, give the obstetrical support. So we have our OB-GYNs, we have our maternal fetal medicine doctors that are there, that are part of the treatment team. They are there for consultations, monitoring baby, and we're able to do all that there on the unit, which you're just not able to do in other inpatient psychiatric facilities.
Let's take a caller. Phil in Jefferson, your question. No, not Phil. Is it somebody else? Candace, we lost Phil.
Hi, this is Candace. I'm calling from Addis. I was just calling to see if I would get my own room or if the rooms are shared.
That's an easy question.
Candace, that's a great point. What's really unique and special about our unit is there are not co-ed rooms. We really recognize that pregnant and postpartum women have specific needs. You've got your own bathroom, your own private room, and that allows us to be able to have your family, your baby, come in and visit in a private, setting, along with being able to breastfeed, pump, maintain that lactation support with lactation consultants, that type of thing.
And we should point out that you are accepting patients with a doctor's referral from mm-hmm. other
yes.
hospitals anywhere in the state or anywhere yes. in the region. It doesn't have to be a women's hospital
That's
patient.
Correct. Yes, right. And we accept most insurance plans, policies, that type of thing as
right.
well.
Right, including Medicaid.
Absolutely.
Let's take another caller, Ariana in Central. Maybe Phil is trying to get back in, but let's go to Ariana.
Hi, this is Ariana. My question is, are moms allowed to breastfeed on the unit?
Yes.
And if so,
yes.
how does that work?
Yes. In fact, that's one thing that we absolutely want to be able to give those moms the support. And we even have lactation consultants. So if we have a mom that is wanting to breastfeed, while the visitation's going on, we absolutely want to support and encourage that. And then we are having breast pump so that moms can continue to pump milk that we're able to store. And then we also have our lactation consultants that are there if they're needing any additional support at all.
Talk Louisiana. Let's see. Okay, we're not going to take that call. But you are invited to call 877-217-5757. We've gotten great questions.
We have.
This is Mother's home away from home so she can get back home.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. That's right.
And if she needs to come back, that's okay too.
That's okay absolutely too. That's why we're there.
This is not just about, well, here are your meds, call us in the morning.
No. I mean, we really want to, of course, you know, medication management is a part of care and treatment, but also we've designed this unit to where we're able to have, you know, individual therapy, group sessions, recreational therapy activities. We have an outdoor space for patients to be able to go get fresh air. So it's really designed to be able to address the patient with all kind of other therapeutic interventions as well.
Nothing like having social workers and psychiatrists and physicians and nursing staff and dietary concerns as well.
Yes.
Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with other questions. I'm delighted that the unit's here. Hi, this is Steve Crump, Talk Louisiana, sitting here for Jim Engster. Wow, what a great program he lined up for me. I'm here with Cherie Johnson, nurse at Women's Hospital, chief of nursing, and Dr. Kelly Cannon. We've got lots of calls coming in. We're not going to get to them all, are we? But let's take Melissa. I think it's Denham Springs. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
Question.
My question is, if you're staying there, can you still see your kids? Like, can you still see your family? Will they come visit?
Yes.
Absolutely. In fact, we really want to protect that visitation with family time. And so we have extended visitation hours on the unit where families are able to come. And we especially want to have the babies visiting for our postpartum moms. We want to have that infant mother bonding time protected. And so it's definitely something that we encourage.
That's the whole goal.
Absolutely.
That is the whole goal. Absolutely. I see another caller coming in from, I think, Baton Rouge. Chris, you have a question for our guest today.
Hey, everyone. How y'all are doing? I just had a quick question. I have a friend. I was wondering, how do I go about getting them admitted into this hospital? So how do I go about, what steps do I take?
Cherie, you want to take that?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing is them to reach out to a healthcare provider. Most women do have a healthcare provider, really, asking for the help, explaining what you're going through at the moment. That way we can assess and determine really what the right direction, if that's an inpatient stay or outpatient visits, what kind of medications we might need. So, definitely reach out to a provider.
It's amazing. Chris reminds me just now, as you answered that question, Cherie, of, as a retired pastor, I was reflecting back on how many families, how many mothers needed exactly this in my career. And there was little available, at least not this whole systems right. approach to getting care. The caller, let's take more calls, 877-217-5757. We're glad to get these questions. Tell us about the unit. I think it's on the fourth floor.
Yeah.
Yes, on the fourth floor. We have 10 private rooms. And again, just like Cherie was mentioning earlier, we really wanted patients to be able to have their own space, their own sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And the unit's really been designed to be able to protect things like sleep, which is so important in mental health. And for so many of our moms, they need that rest and that recuperation. And so having that single room with like sound masking in order to help, you know, really create a very comfortable, relaxing atmosphere. Mm-hmm. We have lots of windows to let in fresh daylight and sunlight into the rooms. We have several group rooms to be able to do groups, activities, therapy, visitation. We have an outdoor space so patients can go get some fresh air, and we do activities out on the patio when we're able to. We have an exam room, and again, this is for us to be able to address all the medical needs. So our OBGYNs and our maternal fetal medicine doctors are able to come in and assess the patients and provide whatever medical care they're needing at that time.
What could be a better place but to be pregnant or postpartum at Women's Hospital, where right. we're able to address any obstetrical issue at all?
This could be prenatal, Though it is a perinatal unit,
yes.
this concerns prenatal pregnancy and after pregnancy.
1 year postpartum.
One year postpartum.
Perinatal definition is pregnant.
Yes.
Through 1 year postpartum.
Very good. Hey, we haven't mentioned it on air, but we talked about it off air, and we know this can be suicide prevention.
Yes,
absolutely.
The road.
Absolutely.
For the entire family system. So I think it would be wise for me at least to mention that if somebody's in trouble in any hour of the day, any minute, they could always call 988. That's the national hotline for suicide prevention.
Correct. And then we also have a maternal hotline.
Yeah,
too.
You want to mention that?
So that's 1-833-TLC-MAMA, M-A-M-A.
That's pretty easy to remember. 1-833-TLC-MAMA.
TLC.
Mama.
So, and that's specific to maternal care.
Because then we would get involved with assessment and maybe admission in your unit. Yeah.
Right.
Someone could call their primary care.
Absolutely. That's what I was fixing to say is that we really, call your primary care provider. Please explain to them what you're going through so you can be assessed and determine what help you need.
And it's going to require cooperation from physicians in the area, not only at Women's Hospital. And how's it being received? I know it's new.
It's overwhelmingly great.
Yes, it's been wonderful. We've already been able to help so many patients from not just our community, from across the state, which has been wonderful. And that's encouraging to us to know that the word is getting out. And that's really what we're wanting patients to know is to reach out for help because the help is here.
I know fathers and mothers are listening today.
We hope so.
And let's take a call from Layla from Baton Rouge. Hello, Layla. You got a question about the perinatal unit, the new unit at Women's Hospital.
Yes. I'm just wondering what happens when someone leaves the unit?
Oh, great question. We do have an array of services. We do not discharge a mom unless we've got a very well thought out plan. We have a discharge summary that will go to your physician to make sure that we have adequate follow-up, along with appointments as needed to therapists, to psychiatrists. That's really important to us, even up to a team meeting with the family prior to discharge, just to make sure that we're all on the same page in terms of the plan for mom. That transition is really important
to
us.
Absolutely, yeah, and that access to care we know can be really hard for patients to be able to get just on their own. And so by them being in the hospital, again, just like Sheree said, we have the team that's able to kind of help in making sure that patients' care does continue even after they leave the hospital.
The perinatal unit is dealing with stuff that has been unspoken and undealt with. And let's mention something else that may be in the back of a lot of people's minds as they listen to the show. What about severe loss at the time of pregnancy when there's been a stillbirth?
Yeah.
This is not uncommon. I mean, it happens in nature. It happens in many families.
Right.
And sometimes that is, one of the most, the loss of a child, regardless of whether they were in a mother's womb or not, is devastating to families.
Yes.
And sometimes you need help with that. So we do take patients who have an end of a pregnancy or a pregnancy loss up to 1 year. Those women still have some very specific needs. We have our palliative care teams, our teams there to help support our moms who have experienced pregnancy loss, and we're there for them.
Right. And it can be, just like Sheree said, it can be very traumatic for moms to go through a loss. And so we even have on our team specialists that have been trained in grief counseling for that specific need. And so, again, we just really have formed a team that can address all of these possible needs for patients.
We may have time to get another question in. 877-217-5757, Talk Louisiana. We really only have about a minute left with our guests. I wish you success in this, and I can see that there's already success. But it's great that you're dealing with a systems approach. It crossed my mind, in the study of religions, I was thinking in ancient days, ancient communities, prehistoric communities, dealt with this issue in their own way.
Their own way. Right. It takes a village, and we're trying to be that support in that village for patients, because it really does need that support.
You're really recreating a community here and getting people back home,
right,
back on their feet, which
that's
is what
right.
they all want to do.
I spoke with one of the social workers yesterday, and she told me, we are changing families. And I think that's exactly what we wanted this unit to do.
I don't know if we have a time for Tessa in Baton Rouge. A quick question from you, Tessa. Good morning.
Hey, I just wanted to ask about how this new unit works with DCFS.
Yes.
Quick. So, you know, we are mandatory reporters. And so when there are items or issues that we need to report according to the law, of course, we have a system in place to be able to do that.
Okay, that's good. What else do people need to know? They need to study the unit and be they could visit the unit too, or...
No, they can't visit,
no, because
but
you already have patients
there. But we have a virtual
there.
Tour,
oh, that's true.
And so they'll be able to see exactly what the rooms look like. Very, very lovely and accommodating for our patients.
Because you already have patients there. That's
yes,
why you
we
can't
do.
Do,
do, do.
Thank you very much, Dr.
Thank
Cannon.
Thank you.
Talk Louisiana, this is Steve Crump. Hey, what a show this is. We had a lot more to talk about, but now the second half is with my dear friend, and sister, see, I was going to say it, Maxine Crump, CEO of Dialogue on Race in Louisiana. Hi, Maxine.
Hi, Steve. Hi, my brother.
You are my sister. what did I say the other day when I was talking to you about lining you up for this interview? You may not be my biological sister. And then I had to correct myself. Hey, we all came out of Africa, right?
That's right.
Didn't all of us?
All of us.
Every human being on the face of the earth, we went in different directions.
But you know, we're in a time when people don't like facts.
Oh. I had a feeling you might say that.
You had that feeling.
The staff writer at The Advocate described you as a trailblazer in academic and professional settings. First African-American woman to live in LSU housing, right?
Right.
That's a fact. First woman DJ in Baton Rouge.
Yes.
Yeah. Where did you?
WXOK.
WXOK.
Which was the number one station at the time.
Here, here. First black DJ at WFMF.
Yes.
And first black TV reporter at multiple stations in the region, in the state.
Yes.
So many call letters, maybe we couldn't have time to...
Right, not necessary.
But we remember you. You were recently a panelist with author Monica Guzman, I think last week,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Guzman's book is I Never Thought of It That Way. You joined other panelists, but you had a discussion with yourselves about this divide that we have, whether it's a political divide or... contentious divide, lack of civility, I don't know what we might call it. I'm going to ask you what your findings were from that panel, but first I want to mention, you can call in and talk to Maxine, 877-217-5757, Talk Louisiana Today. So what were your findings from that, on being on the panel and reviewing the work of this author, Monica Guzman?
Yes, she based it on her own personal experience in living in a politically divided family. And I actually grew up with parents who were not in the same political party. It worked fine in my family, but in hers, it was very contentious. And so that's what led her to say, we have to find a way to talk about things that mm-hmm. are differences. Silence is the problem.
And as soon as you read that, as soon as you heard that, well, that sounds like what we're trying to do with Dialogue on Race.
Yes, to be able to talk about things that, in the case of race, not talked about, and when talked about, it gets to be contentious. A lot of disagreements, a lot of arguments, hurt feelings, and it doesn't get to anywhere meaningful.
So how is Dialogues on Race different from ordinary conversations with the next door neighbor or grandma or that uncle at Christmas who doesn't really get involved with a real conversation?
We've made it a point to create a process that people can talk. And one of the things we find that if you ask 10 people to define race mm-hmm. or racism, you will get 10 different answers.
Sure.
So you have to come to a place where there is a clear understanding of what it is we're talking about. So we give, we open all of the series with definitions and distinctions. In other words, we come to what we're talking about when we say these words. And then we give a background, also including the history of race in this country. And so from there, we have a basis for building the conversation. We have a historical accuracy as much as we could find, and terms that are defined.
I was a participant in the curriculum, and there's homework to do. So this is only for racists, right?
I needed a laugh this morning.
So if you're not a racist, you don't have to attend this conversation.
Steve, you know, that's what people think.
Of course they do.
They say, well, the racists need to be here. And they say, we need to fill up the stadiums with this.
And so, yeah, we need to go looking for those people in the white sheets. And they're the ones who need
they're
to be
the
there.
They're the ones
right?
who yeah, need yeah. to be there.
Okay. And your answer to that is?
Well, my answer to that is we all need to talk about it because it's not being talked about. And we need to talk about it. And we have a country that was built on the race construct.
You like my definition that I think I got from the curriculum? It's been a few years now. But racism is prejudice plus power?
Yes. And the power is the systemic setup.
Right.
And the way the system set it up was to determine at the founding that who would be citizens and who wouldn't be. And so it was determined that those that would be citizens are white. It never said white. It just said who wasn't going to be citizen. And at the time, it was going to be those who were enslaved and those who were natives to the land when they got there. Once that decision was made, then that was the beginning. That was the foundation of setting up the race construct. And it continued from there. It has never ended.
So racism is not just prejudice.
Just prejudice. Prejudice comes from the racist construct.
So racism is really an equation. It's this plus that. It's the prejudice plus the power.
And the
dynamic.
Point is the prejudice didn't come first.
The
power did.
Yeah.
There may have been prejudice, but it couldn't have done anything. It had no power.
Was America's original sin the treatment of indigenous people on this continent? What do you think?
The sin was to leave them out of citizenship. The treatment was, yes, definitely devastating. But it continued to disenfranchise them because right. they were left out of citizenship.
Right.
That's not the case now, but that happened.
I know you can handle callers, and we have
yes.
them, and they're lighting up the phone.
Oh, wonderful.
that's my Maxine. that's my sister. Let's take Stuart in downtown Baton Rouge. Hello, Stuart.
Why, Steve, can you hear me?
I can. You're on. What's your comment? What's your concern?
What a melancholy moment, Maxine. you know, you take me back to childhood.
I know who you are. Yes.
You know, Stuart. Okay.
yes.
Another brother calling in.
Yes.
What's your question?
No question. I just wanted to greet you.
Magnificent. Hello. So good to hear you. Glad you're listening.
Yes.
Well, that's a nice shout out.
Yeah.
How about Toni Morrison? Everybody remembers the first time they were taught that part of the human race was other. Mm-hmm. And then she goes on to say, it's as though I told you that your left hand is not part of your body. Ooh.
That's powerful.
That is powerful.
That's the message. It's like you're not quite the citizens we want.
What about somebody who says, oh, I don't see your color, I'm not racist?
What an anecdote. I hope they can stop at traffic lights.
Oh, good.
They
point.
Don't see color, so I hope they're managing not to get too many tickets from not seeing the color of the light.
That is so good. When I hear that was a real setup. That was an easy question because you've gotten that before. But when people say that, I think what they're saying is justice should be colorblind. Okay, that's justice. But when somebody says, but I don't see your color, it's like you don't see me as a particular person.
Yes, and there are two parts to that. The person saying it doesn't usually mean they don't see the color. They mean, I don't think color is a negative aspect. I don't see your color as something bad.
Or that it matters in our culture.
Or that it should matter.
Oh, that
culture.
Is your
But
matter.
It does matter that in our culture. Yeah. And the other thing is they're not recognizing what they're saying to that person is, I don't see you, yet your color matters in this country.
I don't
and
see
so
you.
I don't even see what you go through with the difference.
It reminds me of that beautiful dialogue between Dorothy in the washroom in the film Hidden Figures. And she's talking to her white supervisor. And, I want to get to that in a moment. Stay with me, callers and listeners. Let's go to Jim on I-12. Jim.
Hello. Good morning. Question is, how do we deal with our local media, especially on social media, who, in order to get more interaction on their pages, do a very good job at, essentially riling up people to, to start fights over.
Jim cut out a little bit. I thought he was going to the place that I might have taken that question, but I'm not sure that's where he was. We see black and white diversity on the television set, for example. But how do we go beyond? How do we go further with that? Is that what you're hearing in the question?
I was also hearing that he said people say things on their social media page to incite. And how do we deal with that?
How do we deal with that?
Yeah.
It's an enormous problem, enormous question. Schools are saying, let's put the cell phones away during a school day. Maybe that's a beginning. But parents have a role in this. But culture speaks loud, and people with brash things, cruel things, get the most attention in our culture. Has it always been that
way? And I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but I can see a lot of people are complaining about brashness on social media. But I wonder if people's brashness need to be studied as to why do they need this expression at this time, this much extreme expression? Maybe if they had an opportunity to have a real conversation with an educational process for talking, as they do in Dialogue on Race, they may not be posting in incendiary comments.
You've had great success. You've been in the C-suites. You've been in corporations. You've been in schools. You've been working with, even with the people from the Women's Hospital, they knew you. And the program people have gone through. How has it changed? Oh, wait a minute. I have to look at my time here. How has it changed in 30 seconds from the work that you were earlier doing? I mean, the culture has changed. How has it changed over the years?
The conversation changes because the conversation in the society changes. And as it changes, we have to be able to meet the messages that they're coming in with.
It's been widely observed and maybe even studied that people say things in social media that they never say to a person, eye to eye, face to face. Mm-hmm. Isn't that curious?
It's curious in a way, but they do need to express in that way. Mm. I think that, I don't know that we're going to be able to take that away from them, but if they had a place to have a meaningful process for expressing, they may not need to post those incendiary comments.
It speaks maybe the hopeful side of humanity. That people really, when they see eye to eye, they won't say horrible things.
Right. People are pretty great anyway. They really are.
We'll be back. Hey, we're back with my friend and sister, Maxine Crump. We've got great questions. You and I basically believe humanity's good. Human beings are good.
Yes.
You have to have that attitude to go into this work, right?
Yes. I think you do, especially to sustain it for as long. This is a 12-year-old organization right now. And we had the program before the organization. So, yes,
But some of the questions have changed and the conversation. And what happens when politics get engaged in all this and political parties are engaged?
It's always engaged in it. I mean, we're a society that is run by politics.
What do you want your facilitators to do when they want to just talk about this candidate versus that candidate?
When the facilitators want to or the group wants to?
When individuals in the group just want to do that and don't really want to engage in their own personal stuff, personal stories.
Their personal stories are great. So people want to actually tell their personal stories, and they often do. What they get into about politics, we ask them what part of that they're mentioning that has to do with race, and it usually does. So we have a process for talking. We don't have to keep people from talking about anything. You can talk about whatever you come into dialogue about. One person came in and says, I like to argue. And you say this process isn't about arguing. But if someone argues in the dialogue, that's fine, because we have a process to move that argument into dialogue rather than keep it as an argument. And we never have to say, no, 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 we don't do that here. That's never said. We just raise the questions that will make sure, usually when people argue, each side is wanting to be heard, and we make sure they're heard. Mm-hmm. Once they're heard, they don't argue anymore.
And that may be the cause of some of these lone wolves in our society that do, that are so destructive.
They don't feel heard.
And
that's
also,
right.
And the social media cruelty and brutality.
Yeah, right. Because no one's listening to them otherwise, so they get to shoot it out there.
But isn't it safe to say that race most definitely is part of the political cycle?
Yes,
the
election needs
cycle
to be
right
more
now?
A part of it.
Yeah.
So that we can hear what's really going on. It's being avoided because often people become very disturbed about what their candidate says about race.
I see a caller. John on Jefferson is calling in.
Yes, I'm wondering if you believe in reparations, and if so, how would that be implemented?
I mean, you know, if you got a bill, don't you want it paid? I mean, that's, yes, I believe in reparations.
John, are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, well, how do you feel about reparations? And I think that would come up in the dialogue, right?
What Sometimes,
is,
yes.
Okay, Mike, what is your take on reparations? A difficult issue, isn't it?
I think it needs to have a balanced approach to it. I'm not sure how it should be implemented and what should happen. So I have a lot of mixed emotions on it.
Well, I think
I have another question.
There's a lot of reparation already going on. Reparation isn't just how to do it now. This country has been repairing the damage over time, just not enough yet. And reparations mean to repair.
Excellent, excellent. So what do we need to do to repair? Right. Maybe sometimes making amends, sometimes apology.
Sure. And there are lots that can go into it. Like he says, it's a lot that can go into it. When people ask me that, they mean, how do I think it should be done? Well, it doesn't matter how I think it should be done, but if my answer would be effectively. And it can happen along the way at different times and different stages. It's not one way to think about that.
Here's a way of thinking about it. Recognizing the massacres that happened in Colfax, Louisiana. Only 57 known murdered, but probably many more in 1873. And
sure.
The former governor was there to acknowledge those names with a plaque and all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one way in helping repair and remember, et cetera.
And we, the people, get to say what kind of country we want to live in, not Maxine. So, you know, I believe in reparation, yes, and I think that is kind of a reparation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it needs to continue until it's done, because this is the most powerful, richest nation on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We can do whatever we need to do to make this country as great as we say it is.
And I thought maybe we should lift up the names Denver Smith and Leonard Brown, two Southern University students,
yes,
who were shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
This is very close to home back, what, in the 70s?
Right. We have many, many stories that are part of that.
And recognizing graves that are either unnamed, but the African-American cemeteries along River Road. I mean, that's part of it, too. It's, as he said,
there are many things.
It's complicated. It's complicated.
But it's not something we can't do.
And should talk about.
Yes.
And should talk about. So if people want to get engaged in Dialogues on Race, they could go to the website.
Yes.
Tell us about how to do it.
DOR.LA. That'll get you in.
One more time.
DOR.LA.
That's easy. That's
yes.
easy. The Hidden Figures story I told you off air. I want to remind the listeners. So there's a white woman supervisor of all the black women at NASA, and all the black women are learning mathematics, and they're also teaching themselves the IBM computer. And so it's Dorothy Vaughan and Katherine Johnson and Mary Jackson. Three women who were honored just recently in Washington, D.C.
Mm.
So the supervisor says in the washroom, you know, Dorothy, despite what you may think, I have nothing against y'all. And Dorothy looks at her. It's a great cinematic moment. Dorothy looks at her and says in the washroom, unhesitatingly, I know you probably believe that.
That's a great answer.
And then she walks out of the restroom. And just the two of them being in the restroom is a major accomplishment, because all the black women had to go to several buildings over for their restroom.
And her liking her didn't change that. She still had to go to a segregated restroom.
Exactly.
So when people think that to say, I like you guys, they haven't done anything about it. What are you going to do about the fact that you like her, but you don't mind that she's segregated away from you?
You know, in the film, John Glenn trusts the calculations that the women came up with. I looked that up last night, and John Glenn wasn't sure about getting into the capsule until we checked with the women and their calculations.
I remember that scene, absolutely. Steve, I had someone tell me yesterday that she asked me, what did I do? And I told her that I led this organization, Dialogue on Race Louisiana. She said, oh, that sounds nice. I said, it is.
It's nice.
And she said, I don't talk to many people about race anymore. I said, isn't that a curious question?
Yeah.
What's going on there? No one's talking about it when the CDC says it's a serious health crisis in this country.
Right.
I think they kind of have a reason to know this.
So critical race theory, I mean, we're not supposed to be talking about that in any school system in the state of Louisiana. Does this question come up in your groups?
Yes. Not so much in the group, but people ask me about it a lot.
But how can we not talk about the issue of race when we talk about Louisiana history or the history of
our nation? We need an authentic history, and it needs to be taught in the schools. We need an authentic history to be taught in the schools. People using the term CRT, that's the buzzword. But in reality, we need authentic history. And Dialogue on Race Louisiana does as much as it can to bring to the conversation an authentic history.
Phone number 877-217-5757. What a trailblazer you are, and what good work you're doing. Have you seen some transformations? Have you heard about them?
Transformation.
Yeah, people who said, "Well, this was really good. I never thought of it that way before."
Lots.
Or before I met you, I didn't see things quite that way.
Lots.
Because people are having to listen to each other.
Yes, one person told me that they wish they had understood their father better because they thought their father was on the wrong side of race. And they would argue with him all the time. And then they realized their father was just following the narrative that is in this society where white is the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And she was learning, no, father, all of us belong in this country. We were all citizens of this country. We should have the same thing. And so she said, I realized that I've been so angry at him, and he's my father, and I love him, and I'm not going to fight him all of my life. And so that is what she got through dialogue, that she didn't need to be fighting her father for what he didn't understand. I said, yes, he has not been through dialogue either. You have. And that doesn't give you the right to go and make him wrong.
Muhammad Ali said, why are all the angels white? Why aren't there some black angels? I think we've seen black angels, and we've seen black Santas, etc. Although I'm still working on that little baby Jesus and the Mardi Gras king cake. It doesn't look very Semitic to me, that little baby Jesus. That little pink Jesus doesn't look very Semitic.
The little
to
things
me.
Count, Steve.
Well, we take progress however we can get it. My thanks to Dr. Kelly Cannon, Cherie Johnson of Women's Hospital, and Maxine Crump. From Dialogues on Race, and producer of the show, Robin Dow. We'll welcome Jim Inkster tomorrow. He'll be back in this chair. And so I mentioned earlier that today in blues, today is the blues singer Lemon Jefferson's birthday. He was often called Blind Lemon Jefferson. He said he was born around Dallas, blind from birth, but he could always tell the difference between a copper penny and a dime that went into his tin cup. He'd take the penny and throw it at somebody if he thought he heard a copper penny go in his cup. He was no doubt the most popular blues singer from 100 years ago. He recorded probably 100 records with Paramount Records in Chicago. He'll sing us out today.
I'm broke and I ain't got a dime. I'm broke and I ain't got a dime. I'm broke, ain't got a dime. Everybody gets it hard sometimes. I was standing on East Cairo Street one day. I was standing on East Cairo Street one day. standing on East Cairo Street one day. One time.